The Packers enter the bye week, but first we take one look back at the Saints game. What went wrong with the Green Bay defense? Why couldn't they stop Drew Brees in the New Orleans run game? We find out with Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com next. Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou, joined by LiveBlog director Jamie Snowden, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. We're recapping this game against the New Orleans Saints one last time.
Expert interview.
It's time for our expert interview. We have joining us on the phone Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing today?
Doing well this morning. How about you, Brian?
Very good. Glad you could join us during the bye week here. Let's get down to action here with this Packers loss to the Saints. Now, with Sam Shields out of the game, the starting cornerbacks for the Packers, Tremont Williams and Devon House, they both had rough games. What did they seem to struggle with, Nathan?
I would agree with you. They both had rough days this past Sunday. Tremont Williams allowed 6 catches for 102 yards and 2 touchdowns, which those numbers make it look a little worse than it actually was. Some of those catches were just excellent plays by the offense that any defensive back, regardless of how good they are, would have trouble stopping. So part of it was just he missed 2 tackles in the game in the run game. So that's where his biggest problem was stopping the run and having those 2 missed tackles there. Devon House similarly also allowed 6 catches in the game, but he also had a nice pass defense to make up for it, as well as a play where the offense caught the ball, but he was able to tackle them short of a first down on a third down play. So that was good to see out of him, but he missed 3 tackles in the run game. So really the big concern out of both of them was their missed tackles in this game. And also just Drew Brees was on his A game, and when one of the greatest quarterbacks ever is on their A game, there's not much any defensive back can do.
Speaking of missed tackles, also in the secondary, Clint Dix appeared to miss several of them this past Sunday. Was this his worst game yet?
I think this was his worst game so far. And it was, again, due to the missed tackles. He missed 3 of them in this game, where over the first 7 weeks of the season, he missed 3 over those 7 games. So he doubled his missed tackle total for the season. He did have one nice play in the run game where he forced a cut by the running back, but also allowed another 11-yard catch by Jimmy Graham. So with the missed tackles and then the mix of good and bad outside of the missed tackles, I would say this was his worst game both against the run and the pass.
Also at the safety position, Micah Hyde seemed to have his struggles as well. You mentioned it before with being a little deceiving with Tremont Williams. Kind of seemed like one of those long completions there to Brandon Cooks kind of came into the coverage zone area of Micah Hyde. Would you expect Micah Hyde to be the odd man out at safety when Morgan Burnett returns from injury?
Yeah, my guess is when he returns from injury, Hyde will still get some playing time in the base or nickel defense, just like what was going on before, but Clint Dix receiving most of the playing time, this Hyde seeing some of it, and then still seeing the snaps in the dime defense, where if I were in charge, I would just leave Hyde to play in the dime defense and let Clint Dix play every down. But in this game, he had his struggles as well. He allowed that touchdown that you mentioned. It was basically had both players responsible for that one. He also had an illegal contact on Jimmy Graham, missed a tackle on a screen play, and then another play where Graham had Hyde beat, but the pass was underthrown, so that made it look not so bad on Hyde. But Part of the problem there is he was lining up against Jimmy Graham on a fair number of snaps, but still, it wasn't a good game out of him. And unlike the other players, missed tackles wasn't Hyde's biggest concern.
I can't agree more with the assessment of how he should be used. I see Micah Hyde being your dime back there in the slot, and let Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett split up those snaps at safety. I think that's the way to go. We already talked about the missed tackles in the secondary, but where did the Packers' run defense go wrong in the front seven?
Well, part of the problem was Mark Ingram just ran to the far outside on 10 of his 24 rushing attempts. And on those 10 attempts, he had 102 yards. So that's over 10 yards per attempt when rushing to the outside. So that's where the defensive back problems came in. When he ran anywhere in between that, he had his 14 attempts for 70 yards, which is still good out of Ingram, but not nearly as good as he was to the outside. Part of it was the missed tackles. Like we said, the Packers typically have about 8 missed tackles per game, and they have 13 in this one. And part of it is just the New Orleans offensive line is good at run blocking, especially the interior, and run defense isn't necessarily the Packers' strength on defense. Mike Daniels is great at it, and Metrogian has been playing up to expectations or maybe even exceeding expectations. But players like the Packers' outside linebackers, they get their playing time because they're good at pass rushing and not because they're good at stopping the run. And the inside linebacker situation has been a little bit of a mess. In this game in particular, Sam Barrington did a decent job, but A.J. Huck, we graded him out as a negative 2.4 against the run in this one. And the rest of the front seven played pretty average against it. It was just those missed tackles and then Ingram specifically going to the outside so that it would have to face the defensive back.
Yeah, the Packers going to have to be wary of that moving forward as teams see this weakness. And I don't know if Sam Shields and Morgan Burnett are the answer to that. We'll find out. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on Wednesday morning. Turning to the other side of the football, Nathan, I know Aaron Rodgers graded out as the Packers' top player on offense by Pro Football Focus, but did you see a big difference between his first half and second half after he suffered the hamstring injury?
The one thing that I noticed was not so much in his quality of play, but how he was playing. The biggest thing was his average depth of target changed. Over the season, he averages 7.9 yards of an average depth of target, so on his average throw, the ball went 8 yards beyond the line of scrimmage before getting caught. In the first half of this game, it was at 6.9 yards. And then in the second half, it was down to 4.3 yards. So he was really attempting shorter passes, which are easier to complete since they're shorter. So I think Rodgers basically knew what his limitations were. And instead of making bad decisions or having that injury really hurt him, it seemed like he knew what he was capable of doing and then making good throws within his limitations. Throughout the game, both before and after that point, there weren't any big highlight reel throws that you would say are great throws. There were just throughout the game a whole lot of throws where it looked like, okay, that's a pretty good throw, but not so much bad throws or him making throws that he shouldn't have made.
Yeah, I think after the injury, you saw a lot of shotgun, and then you saw a lot of quick throws as he didn't want to have to wait in the pocket and have to scramble if he didn't have to. On the offensive line, Lane Taylor replaced TJ Lang, who departed with an injury. And Taylor obviously had several rough moments, but how bad was it for this young guard?
To start off with a bright point, there really wasn't much of a difference in the pass game between what TJ Lang would have done and what Taylor did. We just had him down for a one pressure allowed and then one on a play that was called back by penalty. So in terms of the pass game, it wasn't too bad. Where the problems really came in was against the run. There were 4 times where the man that Taylor was blocking ended up making a tackle for either short gain, for no gain, or for a loss. And then another 2 plays where the defensive player that Taylor was blocking ended up causing the running back to change his running path. So that also wasn't very good. There were six times where the Packers ran to either gap to the left or the right of him. And on those plays, the Packers ran for a combined 1 yard, so an average of 160 yards per carry. On all the other carries that went anywhere else, they had 88 yards on 13 carries. So they found success elsewhere, but just not running around where Taylor was.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the Packers treat that going forward if Lane Taylor has to play some more. But in the running game, Eddie Lacy, or I should say at running back, Eddie Lacy had career highs in receptions and receiving yards. Was that kind of able, in terms of how he graded out, was that able to overcome a modest evening in the rushing department?
In the run game, he did do a decent job throughout the game. It was just he didn't get enough carries. Mm-hmm. Since the Packers were losing late, they weren't getting him the carries in the second half. He was averaging 4.5 yards per carry in the game, with most of them coming after contact. And if Lang had played, I'm sure that would have been higher as well. But with his receiving, he at most saw six targets in a game in any game in his career before this one, and he saw nine targets in this one. That led all of his raw numbers to be the best that we've seen out of him. In terms of how he graded out, it was also the best we've seen of him in the past game. So you add that all together, and it was one of the best games of the year out of Lacy so far.
All right, time to put this game in the books. I don't want to talk about this loss anymore. So, Nathan, I know the next matchup doesn't come until after the bye, but giving you the week off next week due to the bye, let's take a brief look ahead to the Chicago Bears. How dangerous is this team despite their less-than-stellar record?
Yeah, not a whole lot has changed since the last time the Packers played the Bears. On offense, Jay Cutler had one excellent game against Atlanta a few weeks back. But outside of that, the five of his last six other games have all been below average performances out of Cutler. Forte and Bennett have been great receiving options. The wide receivers haven't performed as well as they were playing late last year. So the Bears on their best day could have an excellent day passing the ball. But really recently, we haven't seen much of a great passing game out of them, as well as not the best run game out of them as well. On defense, their secondary is full of concerns for them. Kyle Fuller has been their best cornerback recently this year, but he wasn't able to play their last game with an injury. So a lot of players at the Bears probably would prefer being on the bench rather than on the field. In terms of linebacker, they have had their struggles as well. They're not sure who they want on the field for them. They've had seven different players playing at least 100 snaps in their linebacker spot, and no one's really stood out for them. So probably the biggest concerns the Packers will have to deal with on the Bears defense is defensive tackle Jeremiah Radcliffe, who missed the first game against the Packers, and then their defensive end Willie Young, who will probably see more playing time now that Lamar Houston got hurt. So as long as the Packers offensive line can get the best out of those two defensive linemen, the Packers offense should have an easy day when they play the Bears again in a week and a half from now.
Well, looking forward to that. Nathan, seeing as we don't have you next week, give me your pitch for ProFootballFocus.com. We always have our listeners. I think it's good to show them, what do you do at Pro Football Focus, and why should they go out and get a subscription?
Sure. What we do is we go into more detail than anyone else in terms of the film we watch and the stats that we collect along with that. We have multiple people watching every game each week. Some people are marking down which players are on the field, what they did on the play, and where they lined up on the start of the play, so we know how players are being used, the team tendencies there. And then we also have people who grade every player on every play, as well as collect stats that the NFL doesn't collect. So our grades can look at an interception where the pass was tipped off the wide receiver's fingertips and then fell into the hands of a defensive back. And that could be a good throw by the quarterback, and the receiver was the one to mess that up. And so we can grade the quarterback well, where general statistics will say that's an interception, that's bad for the quarterback. Along with that, we keep track of stats the NFL doesn't keep track of, not just sacks for defensive players, but hits and hurries as well, as well as the offensive player that allowed that. So we don't just get a sense of how good the skill players are on a given team. We know how good the defensive players are, the offensive line is playing. And if you go to our site, you'll see plenty of articles that you can read for free. I just wrote a 32 observations article, just a quick observation for each team that you can read for free. Or we have a premium section where you can get all the stats and grades that I was just talking about. And that is $27 for a year subscription.
Yeah, and it's important to know is even though we're halfway through the season, you know, it's not like people are only going to get half a season of stats. It lasts a calendar year, correct?
Yeah, it lasts a calendar year, so you get the rest, all of 2014. We have data going back to 2007, so anything you're curious about from the 2007 season to the 2013 season as well, if you get the premium section, you get to see all of that.
And Nathan, you know, just came into my mind here as you're talking about this. I recently read the article in the Green Bay Press Gazette by reporter Pete Doherty, and he's talking about advanced statistics and interviewed somebody from ProFootballFocus.com. Now, you guys actually have clients in the NFL, don't you?
Yep, we have clients in the NFL, NFL teams that use our data to help them in various ways. I mean, the double digit for how many teams that we work with at this point. So a lot of the NFL uses our data as well. So hopefully if it's good enough for NFL teams, it's good enough for consumers as well.
Well, very good. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us. We'll give you the week off next week, but we'll talk to you in 2 weeks after the Bears game.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me yet again, and I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
All right, take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us here at Cheesehead TV on a Wednesday morning. Great to have him join us as always. You know, we'll go without his analysis for 1 week next week as we have no game to review, but looking forward to him in 2 weeks' time. But let's get to
Packers News of the Day.
Packers news of the day. I don't think, you know, with the Packers on a bye week, there wasn't a whole lot yesterday other than to say the NFL's trade deadline has come and gone without any action by the Green Bay Packers. Not exactly like Major League Baseball, where you happen to see, you know, a few trades consummated on the deadline day. And there were in the NFL, there were two trades, actually both involving the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They make two moves yesterday, kind of appears as if the Buccaneers at 1-6 on the season are looking toward the future, trading away former first-round safety Mark Barron and linebacker Jonathan Casillas, trading Barron to the St. Louis Rams and Casillas to the New England Patriots. But other than that, it was you know, kind of a quiet front on the trade deadline, you know, despite you know, there's a prominent Packers columnist who suggested the Packers should, you know, kind of have some interest in maybe dealing one of their defensive backs. And I don't know, maybe the phones went cold after watching the Saints game and they didn't play all too well. You know, Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, pardon me for being so vague here, but, you know, he suggested in his column before the Saints game that the Packers should consider trading, you know, some of this depth they have, young depth that at particularly the cornerback position, you know, Casey Hayward, Devon House, Micah Hyde, Dimitri Goodson, guys like that, who, you know, maybe the Packers could take, you know, afford one loss there and still be in okay shape. But, you know, that it doesn't, you know, obviously we know now nothing happened, but, you know, Devon House didn't look good in the Saints game. Micah Hyde didn't look good. I don't know if there was any interest before that. I doubt there was any, you know, serious interest, just because that's the way the NFL works. You know, teams don't like to make trades during the season because it takes so long for when you go to a new team to get caught up on the schemes and how do you use this guy and all those things. It's just, you know, not like baseball. It's such a different type of sport, not better or worse, you know, just different. It's not, you know, you're never going to see a ton of player trades in the NFL. You see tons of trades on draft day, but it's mostly just trading picks for picks, especially in the last few rounds. But Packers standing pat, despite needing, players at a couple positions. You could make the argument they needed an inside linebacker or a run-stuffing defensive lineman, a nose tackle. I mean, those guys are kind of hard to come by. I know just kind of social media here and there, I see people speculate because, you know, this was kind of a talking point during the preseason as well. The Packers should make a move for Arthur Brown of the Baltimore Ravens. And, you know, Arthur Brown, kind of a big name coming out of college at Kansas State, was kind of considered one of the top inside linebackers at the time, but hasn't found much success in the NFL, kind of an odd man out in Baltimore. He's on the roster but doesn't receive that much playing time. You know, admittedly, since joining the NFL, I haven't been able to watch much of Arthur Brown. You know, I remember watching him at Kansas State and being a stud there, but, you know, it's a big difference between college and the pros sometimes. So, Packers standing pat. What I'd like to do is get more into the, on the show today, get more into the Packers' problems on run defense. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it with Nathan Yonke and how the, you know, particularly in the secondary, the missed tackles were troubling. But I think head coach Mike McCarthy got into the Packers' struggles rather well during his press conference on Monday here. And I have some audio about why the Packers' run defense struggled. Listen into this.
You know, we need to get them in third and long. I mean, that was really our goal, and we didn't hit that. And really, you know, that's, like I said, the Achilles heel was the run defense, because I think it was a third and, you know, they had 11 third downs, and nine of them were third and four to less. Third and four and less. I mean, that's, you know, that's, you're playing uphill as a defense there against an offense like that, because now they're in the run pass mode all the way through. Their play action passing game is obviously has a more of an impact on your, you know, your front seven, and they were able to hit the big shots on our back end.
Yeah, you know, I went through some of this in our column here at Cheesehead TV posted yesterday. Mike McCarthy basically reiterated this right there. The reason the Saints had a lot of success is because, you know, they had success in the run game, particularly first and second down. Well, when it came to second and third down, you know, the Saints are facing second and five, second and four, second and three. Likewise, you know, third and five, third and four, third and three. And the Packers just don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they could either run or pass in those situations. And you know, that's when it's really tough on a defense, because, you know, if it's third and 10, you know, over 90% of the time, a team's going to pass the ball, you know, unless it's, you know, just late in the game or there's extenuating circumstances. You can really force their hand a little bit and kind of be ready, knowing what a team is very likely to do. But when it's, you know, third and mid or less, you know, third and four, you don't know what the Saints are going to do. And then they go with play action. And then the defense is just totally fooled because they think, oh, run. And now all of a sudden it's a pass and the defensive backs are out of position. And Drew Brees has such a quick release and accurate at that. You know, he was just able to carve up with a lot of quick little passes, carve up that Packers pass defense then. It was really tough for the Packers because they didn't stop the run on first down. It didn't stop the run early. And you know, it's you know, part of it had to do with the missed tackles in the secondary. But, you know, during this column I wrote at Cheesehead TV, how do you fix the Packers' run defense? And I don't even like to use the word fix. How can it improve? You know, it's the Packers aren't going to fix it between now and the end of the season. It's not like they're going to go. They currently rank last, dead last, 32nd in the NFL in run defense. They're not going up into the top five anytime soon. You know, there's no free agency. There's no NFL draft between now and the end of the season. But how can they at least improve? How can they become, you know, middle of the pack? I mean, that's what you want from this Packers run D. If they can do that, they'll be okay because they're really good at pass defense, you know, and all these metrics and like turnover differential. Great. Packers been taking the ball away. They haven't been turning the ball over. They've been limiting opposing quarterbacks to low passer ratings, despite what Drew Brees just did to them. But, you know, if the run defense was better, Drew Brees wouldn't have been so effective either. So you can look at it through that lens. But so I kind of, you know, came away with three findings that the Packers, you know, here's what they need to do. And one is eliminate the missed tackles. And I think one thing to point out here is we saw Clinton Dix miss several tackles. But the silver lining here is Clinton Dix, the first-round draft pick of the Green Bay Packers, a lot of his mistakes are born out of aggression. And I think you can live with that. You can work with that. You know, his mistakes aren't mental errors where he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, filling the wrong hole or anything like that. It's just all of a sudden he is flying up and he's ready to make a tackle. And then he puts the head down. He can't even see what he's hitting. You just hope that, okay, when the Packers do their film session, Coach Darren Perry is getting on his ass and you know, telling him what's wrong. And you know, Clinton Dix is still young enough and talented enough where he's going to fix this. It's going to come around. So that's the silver lining, I think, there. I have less confidence with some of the other guys on the team. You know, these defensive backs in particular, Tremont Williams, Devon House, there, you know, it's got to be a very conscious effort and fundamental, as Mike McCarthy says, focusing on fundamentals with them. But the weird thing is, you know, the Packers came out from the defensive line to the linebackers to the secondary that game against the Minnesota Vikings. It just seemed like that whole team was fired up. Like, they were not missing tackles. They were being aggressive. They were hitting hard. You've seen it. You've seen it from this Packers defense. I don't know what the big difference was between then and what happened in New Orleans, why they kind of got a little more passive in their tackling. Not Clinton Dix. He was aggressive, but the rest of the team seemed so passive. It just, you know, are they not... is the motivation different? I mean, I realize they played at home against the Vikings, but I mean, come on, let's be professionals here. Let's get up for big games like this. And if they did, you know, we're overestimating the Saints. Well, shame on them. Two, the Packers got to figure out their inside linebacker situation. And you know, you've seen change at inside linebacker this year. And, you know, after that was the week six game against the Miami Dolphins, Brad Jones struggled. Well, guess what? You know, a lot of people called for Brad Jones going to the bench, and it's happened. Brad Jones has not played a snap on defense in the past 2 weeks. So the Packers may have, you know, kind of made a firm decision there where they're like, hey, we're going to go with Jamari Lattimore and Sam Barrington here. And that's what it's been the past 2 weeks since that time. Barrington and Lattimore have kind of shared snaps opposite A.J. Hawk. And, you know, by no means gone through this topic, you know, especially during the offseason, a zillion times on the show. By no means is A.J. Hawk, you know, Pro Bowl material, I don't think. Maybe at one point in his career he was. And he was named to the Pro Bowl, I think, the 2010 season, the Super Bowl season, which he never played because the Packers made the Super Bowl. Regardless, you know, he's not great, But, you know, the Packers, I think he's solid. He's the lead communicator there. And you know, he's just solid. I mean, he's not a guy you have to worry about blowing assignments, things like that. You know, he's not a great athlete, not fast by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, I think you're stuck with A.J. Hawk at one position. You got to figure out what's going on next to him. And you've had Barrington and Lattimore sharing snaps. And you know, is that going to continue? Is that how they're going to play this? And then just this past week against the Saints, you saw for the first time this season, Jamari Lattimore take the dime role away from A.J. Hawk. And, you know, I do think that's a good idea, you know, when it's third and long and you know a team's going to pass. I'd rather have Jamari Lattimore out there and his speed than A.J. Hawk and his lack of speed, you know, covering offensive players, whether it be tight ends or whoever. I'd rather have Jamari Lattimore out there. I think that's a great move. But, you know, apart from the dime package, is it going to be Barrington? Is it Lattimore? Are they going to share? Packers got to figure that out. I'm all about going with Lattimore all the time, kind of a full-time player. And I think part of the issue was Lattimore kind of was dealing with an injury there for a while. Didn't he miss it was the Dolphins game, wasn't it? When Brad Jones did so poorly, or was it the week before that, the Vikings game that Lattimore missed, or he was injured and had to come out. You know, I think he's been kind of hindered by injury for a couple weeks, and maybe that's why he's been sharing time with Sam Barrington. Perhaps after the bye week here, you know, Lattimore is just has this extra week to rest, and maybe he gets back to 100%, and he can be out there all the time next to A.J. Hawk and then staying out when it comes to the dime defense time. I think that's the way to go, but regardless, you know, Sam Barrington's been okay, yet we finally have seen him these past 2 weeks. For the first time in a regular season action, Sam Barrington's okay. I see the most upside from Jamari Lattimore. That's what I see out of him. And hopefully it's going to come back to him after the bye and he gets back to health. And that was the last point I made in this article. How do the Packers get better? The third point, just get healthy. And I think it's going to come naturally. And this bye week comes at the absolute perfect time. And it goes across the whole team, not just run defense here. Works out perfectly for the Packers, you know, two very notable injuries on offense to TJ Lang and Aaron Rodgers. Boy, if the Packers had to play a game this week, I don't know if TJ Lang would play or not. I mean, Mike McCarthy even said he's not doing too well on Monday. But with an entire week off, maybe he'll be ready for next week. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you just obviously don't want to see the MVP of your team deal with any injury, even though it may be a rather minor hamstring injury. But on the defensive side of the football, getting guys like Morgan Burnett and Sam Shields back, and I think those guys have a little more speed, you know, even though Sam Shields isn't going to intimidate anybody with his size. I think he's got the speed to be in a, you know, a good position to make tackles at least, or at least slow guys down, ball carriers down perhaps, and get help. I think that will be a benefit to the Packers defense. And a guy like having Morgan Burnett out there, he's, you know, he's not a speed demon, but he's faster than a guy like Micah Hyde. I think if Micah Hyde's role is reduced, you're going to see Morgan Burnett out there more often. You're not going to see those situations where, you know, Brandon Cooks ran right by Micah Hyde on that long 50-yard touchdown pass. Morgan Burnett's going to be better positioned for that and more ready for it than Micah Hyde. And, you know, same thing for run defense. You know, I just think Morgan Burnett's faster, going to get in position faster. Even though Micah Hyde's tough, he's a good, you know, a very willing tackler. I just like what Morgan Burnett does better. and having a healthy Dayton Jones, he's not a huge help on run defense. He's more of a pass rusher, but still, having a healthy Dayton Jones is better than having a subpar Dayton Jones any day of the week. So timing of the bye week is great. So let's get these guys healthy and back out there. And maybe this Packers run defense can, like I said, just get back to the middle of the pack. There was a stretch of 3 weeks there against the Vikings, the Dolphins, the Panthers, where maybe the Packers run defense wasn't great, you know, wasn't top 10, but they were giving up about an average of 110 yards a game. Well, you know, 100 to 110, you can live with that. Not the 190 that they give up to the Saints or and Mark Ingram this past week. So, you know, get back to the middle of the pack and then let the Packers pass defense shine on third and long and things like that. That's what I'm hoping for moving forward. As far as our next segment,
the day ahead,
being the Packers bye week, there's not much in the news today in the world of the Green Bay Packers. All the players are out of town. Most of the usual typical, you know, media appearances kind of take hiatus for a week. So not a lot going on. I know in Green Bay, former Packers wide receiver Bill Schrader is representing the organization today at the Bell & Health Clinic in Wrightstown, Wisconsin. That is the one event I've only found for today's Packers calendar post, our daily post at Cheesehead TV. It's a little bit tough to do during the bye week because there's so little going on, but hopefully we'll find out more later in the week. And have some things to talk about here. We'll see what comes across the media crawl. And we'll have something to talk about on Friday. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday here at Railbird Central, 8:30 a.m. Central Time. That'll do it for today's show. But we'll see you back in 2 days' time, folks. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, Alex Talich, I'm Brian Kerr. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called New Country Blues by the Emmett Nershey Band on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.